Round 1. Fight!
This is episode 22 of Don't Be a Scrub podcast. My name is Spider Carnage, aka Verbose Mute on Xbox Live. My interviewing partner is Mutton, aka Muttonhead01 on Xbox Live and PSN. On this episode, we have a very special guest, as always. His name is Western Wolves Ryan Hart. This interview was done a few days after Shadaloo Showdown, and yeah, we hope you enjoy the interview. So Ryan Hart, how are you finding Australia so far?
It's been amazing here. I just didn't expect it to be so nice. I mean, everywhere's nice. Well, let me try and break it down a bit better than that. I think Australia surprised me for how chilled out and relaxed it is here. Mm. People seem to be, you know, genuinely happy with just being alive, you know? and I don't always get that feeling about people. And I've never had such a friendly, you know, community around me. Like,
right.
I don't know, when I'm out on the street, people just seem to say hi, or, you know, seems just, yeah, I don't know. People are just so free here, you know. Yeah. I've got that feeling in Melbourne and in
even the drunken bums are really cheerful. And,
even them, like, yeah. They're like, you know, they're happy about their extra bottles of beer.
Yeah, yeah,
no, it's cool. But I've it's definitely changed, like, how I think about places I would like to live and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
I'm very happy here.
Cool. So, what do you think of Shadaloo Showdown? How's the experience been so far?
Oh man, I don't know why they bothered. But that event was awful. No, Shadaloo Showdown was awesome, man. I mean, to be able to hold a multi game tournament with that many top players, that just gets a round of applause. It's not easy. Yeah. It's not even easy to organize a bedroom tournament with your local mates, let alone have internationals come from every part of the world, you know.
Yeah.
And just to be under one roof for a few days. That's brilliant.
I mean, have you heard much of the Australian scene before Shadaloo Showdown? Or
have I heard much about what?
The Australian scene.
The Australian scene. Well, I've met, you know, the couple that I've seen at Evo,
like Toxie.
Yeah. So, you know, I knew those guys and on Facebook, you know, we talk sometimes. So right. I knew those guys. But yeah, as in the whole scene, you know, I didn't really know much about what went on here. You know, I didn't know that there was a big divide in, like, the Tekken community. There's a little bit of beef between Sydney and Melbourne and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And on Marvel, they had that as well.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That guy challenging Toxie and stuff.
Yeah,
like
that. Salty so, money matches.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. I mean, it's good to have, you know, a thriving community that kind of, you know, has a bit of pride. You know, that local pride about their scene, and they want to be the best in their area or their country. That's nice.
So, I mean, like, since you haven't heard much about us, like, what was your primary motivation to come down to Shadaloo Showdown?
Well, I wanted to come to Shadaloo Showdown to, you know, show what Europe has to offer, to show that we have good players in Europe and the UK.
Yeah.
I've been traveling everywhere, so it was nice to come to Australia and, you know, just be a part of the event, because I couldn't come to the previous one.
Right.
Just a few things. I think the Shadaloo Showdown staff and my sponsor kind of got in communication a bit too late, and then things couldn't really get off the ground.
Yeah.
So this time we made sure it happened properly, and, you know, that would come down. And I always enjoy playing with high-level players, no matter where they're from. And this time I got to play lots of different ones, you know, in and out of tournament. And that's always a good learning experience for me. So,
I saw you playing tons of money matches. Yeah,
I know. Yeah, it's always a big favourite for me, playing money matches.
Yeah.
So, no, that was good fun.
So, was there anything in particular that you liked about the event, or something that you wish we could have done better?
It's sometimes hard to take it all in, because when you're one of the players that plays multiple games, you spend most of your time running around, and you're not really looking around for you know, what can be done better, etc. I liked, you know, the first day, the VIP day, where you had, you know, casual setups, and you had like a little exhibition area that was streamed.
Yeah.
That was nice. I don't know, it was okay for me anyway. I mean, other people might have different opinions, but for me it was brilliant. You know, you had space for people to play casuals, you had the tournament area, you had people that were running the brackets that were clearly marked in their red, you know, tops. So Everything was amazing. I mean, the way you guys sorted out our, you know, accommodation, so we had a place to stay. The fact that we all got to stay together was a really big thing for me. You know, that was really nice that you had, like, the UK guys, like me and F-Word and the Marvel guys all on the same floor.
Yeah.
You know, and Andreas, of course, as well. And then we also had, like, the Japanese next door and then across the hall. You know, and then downstairs we had the Americans, so it was really, really good.
So it was like FGTV, Australia style.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a shame we didn't get together for like a more solid session, like, you know, even like a tournament, you know, just with us.
Right.
That, like an outside the tournament.
Side tournament kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, because we had the setup, we had...
Oh, that's right, because you came on Friday, right?
Yeah.
We had the Box Hill tournament on Thursday. That was kind of like the side tournament.
Yeah, I missed that. Yeah.
And Xiaohai won. Yeah.
And also, so yeah, and I forgot to mention, we had the Chinese players sharing a room as well with the other UK players. And we were sharing with Human Bomb and Punko and M Lizard and Leslie from Singapore. So, so much international connectivity going on there, you know, it was brilliant. So yeah, I'm surprised that nothing kicked off, you know, some group beef, bro. Mm. I don't know, nothing happened. But that would have been nice. But you know, everyone wanted to do different things.
Yep.
These guys want to play Street, and also another thing now is it's not everyone playing the same game.
That's true. Yeah, Marvel.
Some guys want to get together to play a bit of Marvel.
Yeah.
Sometimes some guys want to do Street Fighter Cross Tekken, King of Fighters, AE. You know, there's so much going on now in terms of high level fighting gameplay. So it's quite hard to always fit each other's wants and needs. So and then aside from gaming itself, some people just wanted to you know, from video gaming, some people wanted to go to the casino
right
on one of the evenings.
Did you go to the casino?
I didn't get to go. I know a few of the guys, you know, the Americans. I know Punko was racking it up in the casino.
Yeah, he's the king of gambling, man.
Seth player.
Seth
player. Bonafide Seth player, and that's what you get, where So I heard that last year, I don't know if you, like, rumour has it, I wasn't there, but I was with someone who was getting, I think it was Weirdo Neo, the Korean player, who was getting infinite updates on his phone, because some guy was texting him from the casino who was with Punko, telling him how Punko had never played blackjack in his life, and he was winning, like, he won, like, $3,000 or something.
I don't doubt that for
the
a second.
The guy, you know, the casino staff was explaining the rules as he went along, and he was just winning bare money, like. That guy's nuts.
Yeah,
so, obviously, his guessing is really good.
Yeah, he's...
How's he just winning bare things like that? He hasn't even played it before. Like,
wouldn't put that past Punko. So, I mean, how disappointed were you that to find out that right next to the VIP night, we had Miss World interviews going on in the same hotel?
I'm proper upset about that, man. The honeys that I missed out on seeing, like, it's just not fair. Yeah, I heard that, you know, they had Miss World in the same building.
Right next to us.
Happening all at the same time, so I didn't even know about it. I would have at least had my eyes slightly more peeled for things other than combos if I'd have been aware.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess that's what happens here. So, Miss World... and Shadow Showdown. Gotta do it next year.
Perfect combination. We gotta do a joint event next year.
I like that.
So yeah, I mean, since you got to play a bunch of casuals and money matches with all the internationals, was there anybody that you were surprised or impressed by in particular? Like,
I was really impressed with Nero because of his character, Evil Ryu. I've never seen that character play to such a high level. It's always a nice and a fresh experience when you see that, because you're like, hey, this game is even better than I thought it was, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just the usual suspects that I can expect to playing tournaments, is actually these guys are also viable and they can be used just as well, you know. And I knew the game was good, but obviously to see Amu do so well was brilliant as well. And just generally, those two for the characters.
Yeah,
I liked Michael Tan.
Yeah, his Ken was very amazing.
Very clean,
very
sharp, very impressive to watch. I did like his style. He's such a great guy as well.
I was impressed by the Chinese guys.
What underdogs just coming out and blowing everyone up. Like, yeah, it's true, because no one expected any, I mean, other than themselves, I don't think anyone expected them to just come out and batter people like they did, you know? Xiaohai winning the whole tournament, you know, the boxing tournament.
He was dominant.
And doing really well in singles at Shadaloo as well. Human Bomb, that Sakura, probably the best Sakura I've ever seen, bar Ryo, you know? Definitely round of applause to that guy. And Daco?
Oh my days. What do you think of his Ryu?
Sick, bro. Taking out Fudo twice, you know. As a Ryu player myself, I know that that's a hard task.
I was sitting there like, oh, here comes Fei Long, here comes that 7-3. You see, winning?
Yeah, no, totally, totally. I don't think that match is 7-3. But you know how, like, yeah. I don't know, it's just one of those hard matchups for
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
it is
yeah.
an uphill battle. You are kind of struggling almost all the time.
Yeah.
But no, you know, I do think that they just put on such a strong showing, and it was great to see because no one expected it. So, yeah, the Chinese definitely get my vote.
Yeah, so I think they're gonna do really well at Evo this year.
Like, yeah, yeah. Are they all going?
I would hope so.
Yeah. I mean, hang on a second. KOF's at Evo, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so Shanghai, Dakar.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It's gonna be a fun year for them.
Yes. So yeah. So I mean, are you happy with Europe's performance at SS?
No. I'm very happy with Zach's performance, although I would have liked him to slip into top three.
Yeah.
But obviously those top three...
For Marvel, you mean?
Yeah, for Marvel. That was his game. Those top three are, like, you know, super strong. You know, it is no shame to lose to any of those three. But, you know, I've got a lot of respect for Zach because he is a very new Marvel player.
Yeah.
And to be able to compete on such a high level with such a small amount of experience, you know, is definitely a great thing.
Mm.
So, no, I'm really happy that, you know, he did really well. And no, it was brilliant performance from Zach.
Mm.
Myself, I'm quite disappointed from myself because losing to Justin, I don't feel that I played as well as I could have, gave him too much respect and wouldn't play my regular Tiger Shot game because I was always aware that he might jump in.
Mm.
But of course, when the jump in never came, I should have perhaps maybe started to try and put some pressure on from distance. But I never did. I was always thinking, okay, maybe now.
Yeah.
Okay, he hasn't jumped, so maybe now, you know. Mm. And then even be times where I had an opportunity for an anti-air and I ended up missing it. So I think in that match, you know, nerves got the better of me. Mm. I mean, I can, you know, we played a money match afterwards, Sagat versus Rufus, first to five, and I did manage to win a very close 5-4.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, whether I won or lost, my point is that it was a lot closer,
right,
you know, than it was in the tournament. So I just think that I need to just drop those nerves and perhaps, you know, not give players, just based on status, too much respect when I play them.
Right.
You
know? Is this the first time you played Justin in tournament?
It's the first time I played him on SF4 in tournament, yeah.
Really? It's
first time. Wow. Ever. First time I ever played Justin on SF4. Oh, no, actually, no. I played him on SF4 in France once.
Right.
Very long time ago. But that was a different experience for me because, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You got a good memory. Yeah, there was a double KO round, I think.
Yeah.
The thing is with that match is I was just starting out with Ryu.
Yeah.
Just off of Sagat and just onto Ryu, so
neither
character was anywhere near solid, and that was a hard tournament for me, just based on I didn't have anyone to lean on. You know, it wasn't I wasn't confident with any particular character yet. I was very happy that I did the money match afterwards with Justin because that showed me that it was just my nerves and it wasn't that I don't have the quality as a player to compete with him.
Right.
It was good to win that. And then also Naro, because in loser bracket I then lost to Naro. Evil Ryu, and I had never played an Evil Ryu before.
On that level, right.
But I hate that. I hate the, you know, I don't like that I have to say that I've never played it. Because it just sounds like I'm giving an excuse. I'm not giving an excuse. He outplayed me in the match, definitely did. You know, even in the guesses I did understand, you know, he guessed right and I got punished for it. Yeah. So I don't have any problems with the fact that I lost to him.
Mm.
But, you know, when I talk to people, they come back and say, well, you'd never played an Evil Ryu, so, you know, it's not your fault. But at the same time, the game's been out long enough for us to know all the characters. Mm. Maybe not from matchups, because you won't know unless you play against it, but at least, you know, to have an idea of what the character's about and, you know, watch matches online and stuff like that.
Mm.
So I guess it's just me not doing my homework, you know. I knew he was coming. So, in the same way as the Justin scenario, I did money match him after the tournament,
really?
And I beat him 5-4 as well. So it just comes down to me not having the knowledge when I needed it, you know.
Yeah.
Against Justin, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a knowledge thing. I think it was more of just just getting over the nerves.
Because
I do get, you know, stage fright quite badly these days.
Why these days?
I don't know. I've been doing it for years and years and not having stage fright. And in the past year or two, I've been suffering really badly, although I've been keeping it on really low key.
Right.
But I'm suffering really badly from stage fright. Like, I do perfect until it goes to the stream or until it goes on stage.
Right.
If you look at my recent tournaments, like every single one, I do really well until I have to go on stream.
Right.
You know, until I have to go on that big stage and play for everyone. As soon as it goes to that, things just go downhill from there. Even if the opponent is someone that I could have beaten on a smaller screen,
right,
you know, in the regular setup. So I'm not saying I always win, no.
But
I can lose on a smaller setup, but I'm just saying definitely seen the quality of mine play deteriorate once it's on a big stage. In most previous big tournaments, and I feel that I need to get over something because I think it's holding me back right now.
Is it pressure from your sponsors or that kind
of
pressure?
No. It's not from sponsors. I think it's pressure from myself because of who I am and how long I've been playing for.
Right.
I feel a certain pressure to perform to everyone's expectations, and when I don't do that, it affects me. And I'm no longer just concentrating on getting the win. It's more of a
quality of play, right?
I guess so, yeah. And it's definitely a bit of a struggle for me right now.
And I guess since you've never had to deal with it before, like never had stage fright, it's like a new experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, I've never felt so much pressure to appeal to everyone. Before, when I was a kid, I used to just play as for myself. I used to play for myself, and I didn't care about what people thought.
Yeah.
And now, it's like, oh, you know, Ryan's using Yun. Or, you know, Ryan's doing this, and I care about it. I should ignore it, you know, but it bothers me. It bothers me when people think I'm not as good as a certain player just because of a certain match or a certain result. I subconsciously notice that I'm looking at my own matches, and I'm looking at, you know, what happens in them to see if I've done a certain thing correctly and stuff like that. And I shouldn't care, really, you know. I should just play play the game for myself, but... I these days, you know, community is important as well, and I care about my image. You know, I care about what people think of me. Like when I go on like event hubs, it's really painful sometimes
because
a lot of people who have never met me and they don't know me personally, who never spent any time with me, you know, have a complete picture of what I'm like.
Yeah,
they have a complete image of the person they think I am.
Yeah,
and some of the things that they say is like. Are things that I wouldn't say unless I knew a person. Yeah. Like, I had a personal connection, like, I'd spent time with them, you know? And, I mean, these people posting might just be really young or something, but I really don't understand why they think these things that they think, you know? And it's quite hard, because sometimes I write things with everyone in mind, and I try to think about how I can maybe support, you know, them as up-and-coming gamers with my experience, because I've been around a lot longer than most of these, or probably everyone on Event Hubs. And I try to, you know, think in a way that allows my experience to show through what I'm talking about. And I don't get any love back from that. It's always like, well, you know, he's just moaning about this again, or he's just complaining, or he's just salty. There's never any credit there. And so... because there's such an imbalance in biased bad opinions, it kind of makes me feel like, well, maybe I shouldn't bother, you know. But then I don't want to do that because I'm just becoming the next guy to give up. And I don't want to do that. I want to be there for the people as a player and as a kind of advisor or maybe a kind of mentor, you know. I don't want to just, you know, fall away and then one day, like, I don't play. Because, like I mentioned earlier, there's going to come a time where these players that are top pro players now won't be around anymore.
Yeah.
You know, people take it for granted that we're always going to be here. There's always going to be Justin Moore. There's always going to be Marlon Pye. There's always going to be Tokido. One day we'll all move on and do different things. But while we're around, I know that what I want to do is be able to share my knowledge with the community and give to the players things that they can carry on to transcend, you know, the generations of video gaming. You know, in getting that off the ground, to have such difficulty from people who know next to nothing, or to people who've had a lot less experience than I have, is quite painful, you know. Unless you, like, win a really big tournament, you don't know what you're talking about. Or unless you beat so-and-so player, you don't know what you're talking about. And I don't think it's always about comparison. Like, experience goes a long way, and the stuff that I've been through definitely can't necessarily be understood by everyone. So yeah, you just have to give me a chance. You know, you have to give me some time, because I think if a lot of players decided to give me some time and actually let me get my words across in the way that... because sometimes it's just communication as well, especially when it's through text. It's not always easy to understand how they mean something, what they're trying to get at.
Right,
But if people just give me a chance, I realize I'm not a bad guy, you know, by a long shot. So, you know, and I do have some really knowledgeable and sensible things to say.
It's really that's really interesting. This, yeah, I can't imagine how Justin deals with his kind of like his peers.
Well, I think Justin maybe has a lot more face time with the Americans because he's in America, so there's more opportunity for players there to see him, to actually, you know, hear his interviews, to be around him. There's going to be other players who have met him and can vouch for who he is and stuff like that. Whereas if people are talking about me in America, there aren't as many players who've actually met me and spent time with me, so it's easier for there to be a general understanding that he's this kind of guy,
just
based on what some other guy said who probably doesn't know me either.
Right.
I mean, I'm not perfect by a long shot, but I think it's definitely rare for someone who's met me and knows me thoroughly and spent a lot of time with me to then turn around and say, I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to fighting games, or, you know, everything I say is negative or I moan a lot. No, I don't think you'd find anyone. It definitely shows that people who do think these things are people that haven't spent enough time following my work and looking at who I am as a person and what I'm doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing. Provides a little, it's just a little bit of a crack in, you know, my progress for me. It makes it hard for me to push on.
Right.
And there's a lot of pressure for me now as a player because the level is that high. You know, everyone is really good. You go to a high level tournament, I mean, you look at Shadaloo Showdown, you have players like Punko and Fudo not even making top
8. Not even top 16.
So, exactly. So way, way far from from the crown, you know, really far out. It's just one of those things. I don't know if it's because I'm from the UK. A lot of people say that it's only because I'm British, you know. If I was from Japan, if everything was the same, I was a Sagat player, Ryan Hart from Japan, the reception I get would be a lot more, would be a lot warmer.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
But because I'm from the United Kingdom, people don't want to accept me for who I am or don't want to acknowledge my accolades and things like that. And that's quite painful. Yeah, to be judged based on location.
Yeah, because you put so much time and so much effort into these things.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of the things I've done, a lot of the work I've done is from the late 90s.
Right.
So, I mean, we're talking about over a decade, you know, of success on fighting games. And this is, you know, also traveling all over the world as well. You know, I've won tournaments in America, I've won tournaments in Japan. You know, I've won tournaments in countries that people haven't even, you know, placed in or done well in. You know, they've like lost in the first round of every tournament. So obviously I was a bit younger then, I had more time, so my success rate is probably a lot higher based on that. But now, you know, it's a bit more difficult to commit the same amount of time. I still have the talent and the ability I did have, but obviously juggling priorities around makes things a bit more difficult.
Are you looking to take more of a spokesman role in the future, like SEO?
I don't know yet. Yeah, I do think that I'll probably end up doing something like that because it's quite a heavy commitment to always be playing. And, you know, I know that I don't want to play forever. I know that I want to get into other things because there's so many things I enjoy doing.
Right.
So, you know, maybe to not fall disconnect from the community completely, to take some kind of sort of community role or I'm around for the people more.
I think, I mean, after speaking with you just now, like, you speak Spanish, German, Japanese?
Well, I speak Japanese fluently.
Yeah.
I know some words in Spanish, and I speak a bit of German because I live there. But, yeah, so, you know, those others aren't fluent by a long shot. But, you know, having traveled around, you learn, you pick up things here and there. So I just know, like...
So, I mean, you'll be really good as a community guy because you can communicate.
I guess so. Yeah. Understand some...
I've been following you for a while because you're a Shoto player. I'm a Shoto player as well. So, yeah, I mean, let's talk about Shoto players. Who do you admire? Who do you like to watch?
Shoto's.
Yeah.
Showing your toes. I've got a friend in the UK. Shout out to the Prince. But, like, he, you know, he said why are they called Shoto's? Because they show their toes.
Yeah,
they never wear shoes, right?
Yeah.
They show their toes. Sorry. I had to get that one.
Any favorite Shoto players that you like to watch? Ryu players?
Ryu players that are out there now? There aren't that many. From history.
Yeah.
I really used to like Inoue. A third strike player from Inoue. Yeah. He had an amazing Ken. Right. Not just because he, you know, he was good.
And he used to play Ken, right? Before he switched to Ryu, right?
Yeah. My Ken's too sick. We can't talk about my Ken. So Inoue's Ken, he had a really slick Ken. Everything was on point. He was sharp, precise, really aggressive, and I loved the way he played Ken.
Is that why you like Michael Tan so much now?
Not really. It's different. Michael Tan is a lot more passive because you have to be on SF4.
Right.
You know, it's a different game, so different rules. No, Michael Tan isn't in the league I used to like Inoue as Ken.
Right.
It's slightly less.
Right.
But for the quality of gamers we have now, Michael Tan is an amazing Ken player. Right. Because it's such a rare character to see in high-level play,
right,
you know, in tournaments anyway, it's a lot more appreciated.
Who would have thought Ken would be?
You know, right? Who would have thought Ken could be that good? I mean, MOV's got a good Ken as well.
Yeah, he's really
I'm not taking anything away from him.
Yeah.
But I can see that Michael Tan's put in a lot more time in the game and, you know, he knows the matchups and that shows.
What about Ryu players or Sagat players?
So Ryu players...
Because you play Super Turbo as well, right? So
Daigo's Ryu... just for how consistent his game style is. I know he gets a lot of complaints. You know, your Ryu is boring. You don't do anything. People like to complain about Daigo's Ryu. I've heard a lot of stuff. But he's very consistent and he's very solid. And he has a strong mind because he's able to stick to a game plan. He'll stick to that game plan as long as he needs to. You get a lot of players that start out with a game plan. Okay, you know, I'm going to start out and I'm going to... commit to doing infinite fireballs.
Right.
I'm going to commit to that. And this is going to be my strategy because I know he doesn't jump in that often. The guy will jump in at the beginning of the round and that person will eat a combo.
Right.
They'll completely abandon the strategy they just decided they were going to employ.
Right.
And the reason that's bad is it kind of changes your learning curve because once you decide to employ a strategy, you're employing it not just because you want to get the win, but you're employing it because you want to see how many different ways it can succeed or fail.
Mm.
Just having a jump in is not enough of a deterrent to completely abandon the strategy.
Right.
Because there's different ranges you can use the strategy from, there's different positions you can do it from, there's different bands you can use.
Frequency.
So, yeah, exactly. So there are different ways to employ a strategy, but people are too eager to find only one solution that works for everything and apply that. But sometimes that's not available. Mm. Sometimes it is about mixing things up and looking at how you can apply something and where you should apply it and where you shouldn't and stuff like that. So only once you've got a lot of experience using one strategy do you then know the ins and outs of when and where you can use it.
Right.
You know? So, for example, then after using it for a long time, you might know that, okay, I'm going to apply this strategy, but not from the beginning of the round.
Right, right, right.
Because he can get the jump in. He's in that range.
Right.
So, you know, you'll like wait 5 seconds and then you'll start your tactic.
Right, right.
You don't always have to do something at the beginning of the round.
Mm.
Sometimes people feel, I need the life lead. I got to do something straight away. Mm. No. Sometimes the best thing is to do nothing.
Do nothing.
Yeah. Let them fall into your trap, you know?
Mm.
And also, it's not good to give clues.
Mm.
As to what you do.
Mm.
And it's very commonly known that a top player will memorize what you do at the beginning of a round.
Yeah.
Do you dash in? Do you jump back? Do you backdash? Do you block? Do you throw a fireball?
You stand
what short, does a top player do at the beginning of the round? This is key.
Yep.
You know? When I played Daigo, I knew that he would fireball after like waiting a split second to see what I did.
Right.
So I jumped in.
Yeah.
That split second is very important because that split second of analysis is to look at what they're doing. Once you're comfortable they are doing or not doing something you either want or don't want them to do, you make your move.
Right, right.
His move was fireball.
Mm.
The first point of the first attempt to take some chip damage to obtain the life lead.
Right.
Which I jumped and got a combo.
Right.
So it was a risk I took. But because at the beginning of the round they don't have meter or any ultra or anything, it's not that much of a risk. It's not it's not necessarily a round deciding risk.
Right.
I think sometimes people should look at, you know, looking at balancing up risk taking with what's on the screen, how much time is left, and what kind of elements they can use for a comeback factor.
Right, right.
So yeah, there's all kinds of things there.
That's really interesting that you say, you know, that you admire him being strong because you basically summarize what I do wrong all the time. I decide on the strategy, I get jumped in, and I abandon the strategy, and that's why I fail, basically.
You know, it's like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to use low forward.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk forward with crouching medium sweep and push him to the corner.
Yeah.
And they'll eat one level two focus
and then
decide that that's not a good strategy anymore. But it might be, it just, you got caught out once.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he read you right that time.
Yeah.
It's not wrong to be read right.
Yeah.
It's never wrong to be, it's not necessarily wrong to be read right. If he reads you, he's giving you a clue of how he thinks.
Yeah, you didn't do something wrong, he did something right.
Exactly. So, but what I'm getting at here is if your opponent reads what you're doing, he's also giving you a clue of how he thinks.
Right, that's
inside exactly, inside of giving inside of giving him something, you take something too.
Right.
Okay. So after that, you see, oh, okay, he does focus here.
Right.
Obviously, nowadays on games, we should look at things like what he might think you're going to do next. Don't just go into, okay, I'm going to do a move that's two hits because he's done a focus. Because you should think that he might be aware of that.
Mm.
Sometimes what top players have a difficult time doing is being able to find out on what level they should take their opponent at. Because is he someone who reads a few steps forward or is he someone that's just going to continue doing the same thing until it's, you know, tackled? In the sense that this guy might not do a two hit. Like, if you think, okay, this guy's only using focus, so I'm going to do something that's two hits to break it.
Right.
Whether you do that to break it or not, you have to consider what he's going to do after you've shown him he can't do that anymore.
Yeah, will he stop or will he readjust?
And it's all about staying on top of the mind game like that. So the next time he might try to keep his distance. You might try to do a quick move because your two-hit move, like if it's Ryu and you're going for solar plexus, it's quite slow.
Yep.
So he might try to hit you out and get a counter hit.
Right.
Or if he's going to do a low forward into a dragon, he might backdash after the focus and bait you into it. So there's all different things you can look to expect from a player that knows what you might go for.
Right.
But it's about what you change and how you, you know, manipulate his game into your favor.
Your favor.
So never feel discouraged when they guess right. Just know, okay, This is what he does. This is what he knows.
Right.
Let's go with it.
Since we started talking kind of like about game plans, how would you describe your playstyle? What's your defining traits?
I think my playstyle is definitely more aggressive. I mean, on any game. On any game, whether it be Tekken, King of Fighters, Street Fighter. Yeah. I've always, always passionately enjoyed being aggressive. The reason for that is because when I first got into, you know, the depth of fighting games, what I enjoyed the most was I love the music, I like the graphics, I even enjoy some of the characters, you know, they're funny, they have funny phrases or their moves look cool or whatever.
Right.
But what I enjoyed the most is the mind games.
Mm.
The mind games that go into what make these battles fun for me. I couldn't wait to kind of lock horns, so to speak, kind of get near and start to mix up the minds, you know, start to get into.
Yeah,
I loved the close combat element because that was where we were thinking. That was where we were doing all the thinking.
Yeah.
You know, that was where we were exercising our minds. That was the stimulation.
Right.
When we were both at the back of the screen, wasn't that fun for me?
Right. So why do you play projectile characters? Mostly?
Well, now, Street Fighter 4 is one of those games where you can't just run in.
Right, that's
true. I mean, games have changed now. It's not like King of Fighters where you have a roll, where you have a run, where you have teleports, you know? I mean, now it's about being safe.
Right.
Now it's about picking the right moment to do certain things.
Right.
I mean, although Ryu is a projectile character, he's very much a character that gets stuck in.
Right.
Sagat being a zoner, I was in two minds about going back to maining Sagat before.
Yeah.
Because he's quite dry.
Yeah.
I do find him quite dry sometimes, even to play with. But I didn't go with Ryu because Ryu hadn't changed enough for me to consider him.
Right.
I've been using him all throughout Super and for, you know, a tiny, tiny bit on AE.
Yeah.
And then 2012 comes out and they've given him next to nothing new, you know? And it's like, well, I don't want to do all that again. It was kind of getting boring as it was, you know? Yeah. Now a new game's come out and he's still the same. I want to use someone else.
Right.
Rather than go to right back to the drawing board, I thought I'd pick up someone who I know well.
Yeah.
And and at that time it was already like at a point where people were starting to say, hang on, maybe your Sagat's like kind of better than your Ryu.
Yeah.
You know? So I thought if I picked him up for 2012, maybe I could work out some stuff, and I, you know, made some of my own original setups and kind of looked at what I could do different to other Sagats and made him my main. But from base, you know, from my fighting game personality is very much an aggressive nature.
Right, right.
And it's because I like getting close to use mind games and mix ups. That's the fun for me.
Let's talk about sponsorship. I might be wrong here, but you're the first fighting game player to get sponsored in history, right?
Yeah.
So can you talk a bit about like your history of sponsorship and
My first ever sponsorship for fighting games dates back to 1997. And I was sponsored by Namco directly. So it's kind of like a Daigo Mad Catz thing now.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they want their products to get out there and they'll kind of
this was Tekken, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the time, we used to play in Namco, an arcade, a really big arcade in central London, in Piccadilly Circus on Great Wilmore Street, called Namco Wonder Park. And Namco Wonder Park was the place to be if you played fighting games, because they had everything day it was out or whatever. They would always get everything in really, really soon. And at that time, they had, I think it was Virtua Fighter 3, like the latest one. Tekken 3 was the latest Tekken. King of Fighters 97 or 98. And I was the champion of all three. So Namco thought it'd be a good idea if they sponsored me to be their kind of breadwinner. So what they'd do is they'd give me free credit, sit me down on the machine, and because I was the best at the time, I would beat everyone, and that would encourage people to play more because they want to beat me. But not only that, because I won so quickly, they would make money faster.
Right.
And so they sat me on the machine, and you know, they'd pay, I'd never have to pay anything. They paid for my travel. They paid for my monthly travel to get like a travel card from All Zones that covered me from my house to the arcade and back. And they'd pay for my dinner, you know, like the community manager at the time called something different. It wasn't called community manager back then. It didn't have forums or anything. But yeah, that guy would take me out to dinner. He would, you know, make sure I was fed.
Sounds really romantic.
I know, right? I'm sure his wife thought he was having an affair.
Yeah.
But yeah. So every day he would have to show up at a certain time where he would meet me and take me to dinner.
Pick you to dinner.
Wherever I wanted to eat.
Wow. Wherever you wanted to eat?
More or less. I mean, if I said, let's eat here, it would be where we ate, you know?
Awesome.
So, no, it was pretty cool. I didn't really understand it at the time. It was like, why me, you know?
Yeah.
Because there were so many good players.
Sorry, how old were you at that time?
I was 18.
18? Wow.
Yeah, 17 or 18. So I was pretty young.
Yeah.
And I was way too young to be getting these, like, all these things, I think. So after Namco got me involved with Logitech. And Logitech became my next sponsor. Sponsored me. I used to get, like, equipment and, you know, and things like that. So my first sponsorship with Namco is kind of like what you get nowadays, but on a lower scale. You know, instead of getting world travel, it was like domestic travel. Instead of getting like your meals paid or whatever, you got like a burger or, you know, take to a restaurant or whatever.
But hey, pretty good for 18
years. No, totally. I loved it. I mean, I used to get other things as well, just every now and again. It wasn't kind of part of the package, but it used to happen. Pretty rough in the fact that, like, I had to win. You know, now, I think, you know, you're not dropped if you lose a tournament. But then it was like, you had to win everything.
Wow, that's...
You know, yeah, I was the champion of all three, and I had to win all three. Like, so, yeah, so... That was probably their selling point, you know, their marketing. Oh, this is the guy who wins all three.
Wins all three, yeah.
Yeah, and then after that, Logitech. So, yeah, and then in 1999, Namco, like, invited me to this world tournament, and I won it. And I didn't even know I was going to win it. They were just like, yeah, you can play. You know? And then I won it, and it was like, oh, I'm champion. It was the weirdest thing. So, yeah, I don't know. Everything happened so quickly back then. At least it feels like it did now. Yeah. A lot of the things weren't planned. It was just, you know, I'd get a call, and the call would be like, can you be ready in an hour? Mm. And someone would come pick me up, and I'd just be there in 2 hours. And all of a sudden, my life from being at home in front of the TV was now I'm in front of this, PlayStation, and I'm in the grand final. You know, it was so kind of surreal. That was how it was then for sponsorship. You know, it was really low-key, and it was just for certain special favourites and you had to really work for everything you could, like, give to the sponsor.
So then you were with Logitech and then still with Namco. How long did that last?
Well, yeah, basically, Logitech decided to do their own thing. Okay. They had me just separately to Namco. Right. The guy who was kind of my coach at the time, I used to call him my coach, he kind of moved on to other things. That was when my sponsorship with Namco disappeared, because he... Then I think either he quit the company or he started his own thing. Yeah, I think he quit his company and started his own thing. And that thing concerned Logitech. So I then became a sponsor by Logitech.
I see.
And they picked me up. And then that was, that lasted for a year, I think. Maybe a bit more. Because it wasn't contract work. It was until we need you.
You know? You didn't sign anything.
Yeah, it was just like, well, you're our man until you find someone better, kind of thing. Sort of Starship Troopers-esque, but yeah.
Oh, man.
Of course, you don't get killed in the gaming field, but yeah. And that was like my first sponsorship. I mean, it was really weird, but that was how it was. And, you know, back in those days, it wasn't like now where you have multiple champions. Like, I was the only guy kind of winning on more than one game.
Right.
You know, there was no one who was a champion on more than one game. You know, now it's pretty common. You've got like Justin Wong, you've got Tokido, you've got a few players who are really good at multiple games. But back then, at least, I don't know, until well into like, you know, the noughties, I mean, you didn't have anyone who could really like, you know, hold their own on more than one game. Like, there were people that dabbled, but no one was like controlling things on any games, you know. That was another thing that made me quite different to everyone else. Of course, I didn't win every tournament. You know, there'll be times I lost. I lost the grand finals on King of Fighters 98 to this Chinese guy who'd come over for a holiday. So I was still the people's champion, but I wasn't the real champion. Because, you know, this Chinese guy, he was called Terrence. He was, like, the best King of Fighters player I'd ever seen. He may even still be to this day. You know, he was that good. And he came over to study English for a while. And that was it, boy. No more championship. That guy was in town, but that guy was too sick. So, but it was good because I learned. You know, I got to learn. And at the time, I had some beef with the French champion.
Was that the first time you've ever experienced somebody who was, like, at another level?
Wow, that guy isn't the first... It isn't the first time, no. Because the first time I ever experienced a level that was unreal...
Yeah.
...has got to be when... I went to Japan. First time I went to Japan. And that was in 1998. First time I didn't speak any Japanese. And I went to Japan because I was champion of another game called Air Guides. And it's like this cross, like, Namco and Squaresoft, when it was still called Squaresoft back in the day.
Right.
Done this fighting game, which was like a kind of Power Stone type top-down fighting game where you kind of hide behind crates and shoot and stuff like that. And they had this cast of characters. And they had a championship for this game. And I wandered into an arcade and saw this massive yellow sign saying, you know, win free trip to Japan. Of course, I was really interested, so I read more and it said, you know, we're going to have a tournament this weekend and the winner will get to go to Japan to represent the UK in the world final. So I look at this game and I look at the machine. There was no one. It was like during the middle of the day. There's no one there. And I'm like, wow, look at this game. I don't know anything about it. You know, because I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, if it's a bit like Street Fighter, maybe I can... Yeah. Maybe I'll be able to just find a character that's like Ryu or someone I know and be able to play it. It just looked so different. I'm like, how am I ever going to get any good at this?
On a related note, didn't you get Toppy at a Skull Gloss the first time you ever played it?
Yeah, it was the first time I ever played it.
I heard a story that someone told me that Reinhardt asked me which character had SPD. He picked that character and he got Toppy.
I'll come back to the Air Guy story.
So
I'll come back to the Air Guy story. So basically, Skull Girls.
Yep.
I don't know, Ali on Facebook, you know, Ali came on and he was like, or is it Soul, one of the brothers, came on and said,
you want to enter Skullgirls?
What games do you want to enter?
Yeah.
And it was like, I gave a list of games and he's like, do you want to enter Skullgirls? I was like, all right.
Yeah.
And I was out, and then a day or two after, I thought, you know what, I should really focus on the games I can win. I don't want to, you know, waste any time. And then I got some tweets, like, hey, Ryan Hart, we're so looking forward to watching you play Skullgirls, can't wait, blah. So I'm like, oh man, no. Okay, I better not like back out now. So I know the game's relatively new, so I thought, well, you know, no one's gonna be that good, let me just see what happens. So I went down there and then, you know, I was dreading playing Skullgirls. I was trying to avoid even going around the area, and then lo and behold, after a while, I was like, Ryan Hart to Skullgirls area over there, you know. Okay, so I go over and I'm like, oh man, what am I gonna do? And I really like grab characters. If you look at my King of Fighters history, I use a lot of characters with special grabs, you know, I'm pretty good at using them. And like, I was like, you know, which character has a special grab? Because I know how to get close. So if I can use a special grab, maybe I can do some damage. So I went over there and I was just like, does anyone have a special, do you know who has a special throw? And they were all so nice.
Yeah.
They were all so nice and accommodating. Yeah, you know, pick this character and if you do that, it does that. Yeah. And if you do that, it does an anti-air. And they just gave me a whole strategy. Yeah. Like, you're like, you know, do this, go on. You know, you can anti-air with this move and, you know, you can get close by using that. And I was like, okay. So, actually, they didn't tell me what gets close. They just told me that what a special grab was and what the air special grab was.
Right.
So I knew that. You know, if someone jumps in, I can do that.
Yeah.
Stay on the ground, I can do that. So I had a little mix-up, and I had to work out everything else in the matches, in the actual tournament matches, to teach myself how to apply it. And that was it, really. Once I, you know, got that, I mean, if you look at my top 8 match, you see I don't actually know much about the game. But, you know, in the matches leading up to that, I did look a lot better than I did there. That was really embarrassing having to play on stream. I was like, I realised that I'm on top 8, and now I've got to play on stream, and it's so embarrassing, I'm not good at all. And obviously, once you hear that, oh, Ryan Hart made top 8, he's on stream, okay, we've got to watch this, you know? It's such an anti-climax. I am gonna pick up the game. Like, even before Shadow, I decided I would play the game. I'll start playing now. But yeah, no, that was good.
I just thought that was hilarious. You just like, oh, he just asked which character has a power driver. And it's
just
Tommy.
Yeah, that's a good little story. So back to the Air Guide story.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to find a character that I could understand that could, you know, could help me gain. To help me, I wanted a character that could connect my basics with other fighting games and help me understand the system of the new game. Didn't find one. I tried, I don't know what her name was, Yuko or something. She had a yo-yo. Or maybe she was called Yo-Yo, actually.
Okay,
yeah, it was this Japanese bizarre girl who had a yo-yo.
Yeah.
Anyway, tried using her, didn't really work out. But my worry was that there would already be so many good players. How on earth am I going to be able to get good enough in 3 days, because it was in 3 days, to win this trip? I waited till the evening because I thought good players would come in the evening. No one really came. You know, it didn't seem like it was that popular. I got a friend down to train with me. You know, a friend that also a really good Street Fighter player. His name is Pritz Hatim. And I'm like, Hatim, you know, what should we do? Like, well, who can we pick? And he was like, why don't we pick this guy? And he picks Cloud, because Cloud from Final Fantasy was in the game as well.
Cloud was in the game.
Was in the game. The dog from Final Fantasy in the game as well.
Red 13 or something.
Yeah. So there was a few characters in there because it was a cross. Right. You know, it was one of the first crossover fighting games. Actually, now that I think about it, he picks Cloud. And then I start using yo-yo, you know, and I realized that I can't block.
What?
There's a block button, but you can't block the sword because it's a sword.
Oh, that's so weird.
So this guy's chopping my energy down and there's nothing I can do about it. I'm like, that character is so broken. I've got a new character. and I lose that credit. I go straight to Cloud and we just start hacking and slashing away. It's hilarious. And that became our character, you know. And we were both like, let's enter this tournament and just like pick Cloud. He's obviously broken. Let's do that. So we both get to the this tournament.
Yeah.
Not many people came, to be honest. Yeah. It was a championship, but it wasn't that many players there at all.
Yeah.
So I somehow get to, my friend lost, I don't know who he lost to, but you know, Hatim lost someone, and then yeah. I got to the grand final against the dog.
Yeah.
And when you fight the dog, you can't block the bites, because it's like his teeth and they're sharp and they bite your skin or whatever. Yeah. You're trying to block it. They thought about how they could make it sort of realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy beats me like two rounds. It's supposed to 3 rounds, one game. It was one game.
One.
A trip to Japan was all based on one game. SBO style, you know?
Yeah.
And this guy, this was using his dog, and he bite, and this guy doesn't play games.
Yeah,
he's just, you know, you could see he didn't even have any love for games at all. He just wanted a trip to Japan. Yeah. Came down his lunch hour, business guy in a suit and tie.
Right.
And, you know, just by the way he talked about game, didn't care about, you know, like, playing it afterwards, and he didn't care about, like, he didn't play any other fighting games, and you could see he didn't have any, probably couldn't do a fireball, he had no talent, he didn't seem to have any ability, because this was just hack and slash.
Yeah.
He was well happy, you know, he had this dog, and he did in the grand finals, beating down this little punk next to him, and he had everything going his way, and I don't know, one thing happened in the round, like he hit a crate or something, and I just got the jump on him, and I managed to come back that round. And I beat him, and I ended up winning, like, 3-2, really tight. And I've won this trip, you know, and I've actually won this tournament. It's hilarious. I'm now the champion of this game I know nothing about. So they send me to Japan.
Right.
And this is seriously, like, just pretty, just feeding me to the wolves, man. Like, oh my, it was so bad. But I actually built up quite a reputation in Japan, which I didn't know about at the time.
Oh, that's really just interesting.
Purely based on Japanese people who had visited London to study for holidays and stuff like that, and they had met me there, and they had always said, you know, hey Ryan, if you ever get a chance to come to Japan, you know, come along, and here's my details. And I'd always take everyone's details, but I always thought, yeah, I'll never get to go to Japan. Well, me, never, not in a million years, you know? And here I am, like, in Tokyo, you know? It's so weird.
Thanks to cloud.
I know, right? Thanks to the sword, the cheap sword. And the agenda was that I arrive on Friday, stay on Saturday for the tournament, leave on Sunday. I mean, and I've never been, I think, like, when I went to Japan, it was the first time I'd ever been on a plane. And that was a pretty short agenda. Considering I've never been to Japan, it was kind of like a dream of mine to go. Now I'm going to be gone in 2 days. It was like, no, this can't happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went to the tournament, and I was pretty semi-confident at the time.
Yeah.
But they had a cabinet in the dressing room, because there was a, there was a makeup room where you just kind of get ready to go.
There's a makeup room.
There was a whole makeup room. There were makeup artists, and you have to wear these clothes. And yeah, there was all these things there.
Yeah.
You have to sit down for half an hour in front of the mirror and let them fix you up. And then there was a practice cabinet, so go on and practice your little combos. And of course, everyone starts playing versus.
Yeah.
And in terms of how far world championships go, this is probably the most realistic world championship that I've ever been to, because they had someone from, no, it wasn't that realistic, to be honest, because they had Asian countries, and they had me from the UK.
Yeah.
So they had Japan, Korea, China, they had a couple of other countries, and then they just had me, and that was a bit crap. They didn't have anyone from America. Oh, did they? No, they didn't have anyone from America, no one from South America, you know, no one from, like, Russia or anywhere. So it was pretty bad in that sense. But anyway, so I'm there, this world championship. In the practice room, on the cabinet, I decided to play this guy. They're all playing versus. So I jump on, and the first thing that he does is parry my sword.
What?
The first button I press gets parried, and I just eat some fat combo.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I realise the game's got parries. I'm at the world final, and I didn't even know this. And this guy just did it as if it was obvious, you know. It was like, yeah, don't you know? Well, what do you mean? Like, you know? And I felt so bad, because it was like, wow, I haven't got a chance.
Yeah.
And obviously, he beat me easily. Yeah. And, you know, and so basically, against these things that you can't block, you parry.
Yeah.
That's the system of the game. Right, you know, these things that you can't block are always slow.
Ah, right.
So the sword is actually quite slow.
Yeah.
But because you can't block it,
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It
feels fast.
Right.
When you can't block it, I mean.
Right, yeah.
But because it's slow, to the trained eye that can parry, it's nothing.
Right.
And this guy just parried everything. I don't know if it's only that, if maybe only certain characters can parry, I just can't remember now. But yeah, you know, he parried me away, and I watched them play each other, and it was phenomenal, man. These guys were really experts. To cut a long story short, the guy from Osaka won it. He came down, they called him up, and he was in bed. They're like, aren't you coming? Oh, it's today! And this guy, no, serious, this guy wakes up, gets on the fastest train, just comes down wearing, like, almost like his pajamas, basically. And this guy was hilarious, like, he won the thing.
Yeah.
He won the whole tournament. And at the end of the tournament, everyone has to give a little speech. You know, so I had my translator there and the Korean guy. The Korean guy was the most profound. He said something like, at the moment, the Japanese are dominant at all fighting games, but one day Korea
will
take over. And then shortly after that, we had the resurgence of Koreans destroying the Japanese at Tekken Tag.
Right.
You know, and then we had, like, I think Korea were beating them at some other game, and then, you know, we had, like, Punko doing stuff, against the Japanese and infiltration. But, I mean, it was such a profound thing to say, especially as it happened quite soon afterwards. Because I think the Korean guy lost in the grand final, but it was really close. It was, like, really, really close. So, yeah, you know, for him to come out with that, and he really seemed like he knew what he was talking about. Was that some prophet, you know, where he came out so bold on stage? And
he was like Elijah.
I know, right? And then, like, when he said that, all the Japanese did their, ooh, you know, it was a moment to just think, you know, like, okay, that's kind of deep, okay.
Yeah. So, when are you going to do that at like, an event like Europe is going to...
Take over? Oh, we got some work to do for that. Right. Yeah, we got some work to do. I can't actually remember. I've really gone off on a long trail here, but I don't remember what your original question was.
It was about your history or sponsorship.
Oh, so it's kind of relevant. Yeah,
but...
So,
but yeah, I mean, from another question I have is like, kind of like... I kind of get the sense that esports in Europe is kind of at a high level compared to a lot of other communities, esports and sponsorships and things like that.
That's because esports has been around for a lot longer than fighting games realized. You know, it didn't begin with sponsored Street Fighter players. It's been around for a long, long time. So a lot of the esports teams that are around now have been doing it for years. They've started incorporating fighting games, and now we know about it. So in Europe, it's a lot more developed because that's how long it's been around for. And I think in America, it's like...
Yeah, it's like a step behind, or even Japan, right?
Yeah. Oh, Japan is way behind.
Yeah, so that's really interesting.
Europe, then America's behind Europe, and then Japan and Korea behind. Well, no, Korea.
Koreans are catching up quick.
No. Korea has been around because StarCraft. So they know they're in the loop kind of thing. But they're only in the loop for certain genres, certain games. But yeah, I think Japan is probably trailing the farthest. But they're all like getting into it now.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, these PC games aren't that popular in Japan, and that's why they're not so involved, you know, because it hasn't really been as relevant for them, you know.
Yeah, so what other things do you like to do? Okay, well, do you follow football?
No. I mean, I like football, I just don't follow it. I don't spend enough time on the ground to really follow football. But no, I do like football. I like Man U.
You like Man U? Do you know what just happened? Like, yes.
No.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't spoil it for you.
Okay.
Did you want me to spoil it for you? Okay, well, basically, you know, Man U and Man City are tied in points,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it came out last game of the season. Man City is ahead on goal difference.
Okay.
Man U won their game, right?
Okay.
So Man City is down like 1-2.
Uh-huh.
And the team they're playing, they scored an equalizer in like the 90th minute, and then they're behind two goals, and all the Man U fans are like celebrating everything, right?
Okay.
So in the basically they scored two goals in the last 4 minutes in the 94th minute, and they scored and just ran crazy. And
okay, I didn't know that. I'm not a real fan. I should have known that. That's too epic. That's far too epic not to have known.
Yeah. So yeah, that was freaking epic. That was like
catch highlights or something.
Yeah. Cool. So, but yeah. So
I was too busy riding Tiger Airways to know about that.
Riding the turbulence. You're basically, as you mentioned before, one of the few top players that can play different games at a high level.
Yeah.
What sort of training regimen do you do to maintain that level?
Well, there's two things.
Right.
One is what I want to play.
Right.
And one is what I should play. And that's the battle that goes on for me at home. Because there's times where I know that I should be training on KOF because I'm not as good at that, for example, if that's the game.
Right.
And I shouldn't play Street Fighter Cross Tekken because I'm already better at that. And the tournament for KOF is coming up, whereas the tournament for Street Fighter Cross Tekken isn't coming up. Sometimes I have to follow my heart. Like, there's a setup I really want to practice, or there's a character I really want to learn. And it gets quite difficult to balance everything and juggle things fairly if you want to maintain your maximum capacity on every game. So you have to kind of set, you know, kind of make a timetable.
Right.
Kind of to make a timetable of, you know, how long you want to play a certain game. Sometimes it overruns a bit because you're still in the flow of what you're doing. But yeah, you basically set a timetable and you have a time frame of how long you play each game. And you have milestones you want to reach for each game as well.
Is there any like things that you do? For example, I noticed that your character selection is pretty consistent. You always pick like main characters like you know, Ryu in the Street Fighter series. You pick the Mishimas in the Tekken series. Does that help you kind of like streamline your training for the games?
One thing that people don't know is I'm always a multi-character player.
Right.
There's no game where I can only use one character unless it's a game I don't care about.
Right.
Every game that I like or I'm passionate about, I can always use multiple characters.
Ah, interesting.
So on Street Fighter, I can use like maybe 20, half or more half of the cast to at least to a good level. On King of Fighters, the same, and on Tekken, the same too. Now, with Tekken 6, I never really cared about it, so I didn't really learn any other characters. But every Tekken before that, I've been able to use lots of characters. Tekken 5, right. You know, I could use almost everyone. Tekken Tag, I could use almost everyone as well. And it's only because eventual results will show me that I'm doing a lot better with some characters than others, and they'll end up becoming my main characters. But it was never the initial intention. I never started out as a Tekken player wanting to main Mishimas. Never did. And Tekken 3, my main was like Paul. You know, when Tekken Tag first came out, my main was Anna and Nina. The people don't know that. And after that, it was King and Armor King. It's only later on, when after I've explored almost all the cast I like, at least, when I realize, hey, you know, these guys are, I'm kind of doing well with them, you know? And if a tournament's coming up, why would you not pick them? You know, if you're doing the best with them, why would you pick the team you're not as good with? On Street Fighter, I also use multiple characters too. You know, I use Yun, T-Hawk.
Oni for a while.
Oni, I use Guile, I use Ken, Fei Long. Yeah, lots of characters. So basically, the thing is about that is Street Fighter has so many matchups you've got to learn.
That is true, yeah.
So I kind of can't afford to just be here and there. Like, I have to fix my attention on one character, learn the matchups, and then kind of stick with it. It's gotten so deep now that you kind of can't really mess about in the same way you used to be able to. Because before, like, you just knew the fundamentals of every, like, you knew how each character fought.
Yeah.
So you could almost devise a strategy against them with anyone.
Yeah.
But now it's so deep, isn't it? Like, to know what option selects you can use, to know if this hits their backdash, to know if, you know, what move beats what on wake up. Like, there's so much to know now. Like it's not so generic anymore.
Yeah, like in vanilla, there were like general 16 characters. So if you could play two characters, that's what, 30 matchups to learn. But in AE 2012, it's like you have, if you play two characters, you got to learn like 60 matchups. It's crazy. Yeah.
If I was from Japan, maybe, but I'm not. I'm from Europe. And in Europe, we don't have a player that uses everyone. Just like the last time I lost to Evil Ryu, and we don't have a single Evil Ryu player that plays. And even if we did, would he be as good? You know, there's so many things, right? So, I mean, when you're trying to learn matchups, you really have to focus on these things as well. You have to look at, I mean, every community suffers from lack of players or lack of characters. So we always have to look at, like, what we can get with our main characters and what we, you know, what we can learn about the matchups we don't know as well, you know? And that needs to be a focus now, especially for anyone wanting to go to international tournaments, because there'll definitely be that T-Hawk player you've never seen. You know, there'll be that, you know, I mean, so it's just, I don't know, man, it's one of those things.
So, yeah, what do you think of the new Virtua Fighter? How epic, what's your favorite moment of SS? For me, it has kind of, like, no, it kind of has to be that food, the food or drinking. That was epic.
My most epic moment,
and
people don't really remember, I think, but my comeback against Mike.
Which Mike?
There was only one Mike. In the loser's final, my comeback
against Michael
Tan. No, in VF.
Iron Mike. Yeah, sorry.
Against Iron Mike, My comeback against Iron Mike was the best thing. Because I don't know if people realise, but he was one game up.
Yeah.
One game and two rounds up.
Yeah.
And on the final round, he had a full bar and I had nearly nothing.
Yeah.
And I came back to win that round and win the whole, like, best of three set. So that is way better than just one moment where Fudo rings me out from drinking. Yeah. That's
comedy more.
Yeah, that's just fun. That's just funny. But like, in terms of like quality and like skill and mind games, that nothing's better than that. Like, if, I mean, what people don't know about me versus Fudo is I was never planning to win that. I wasn't going into it like I'm going to beat this guy. Right. It was always going to be, this is Fudo's free tournament.
Right.
I said before the tournament that this is free lunch for Fudo. The whole VF thing at Shadaloo is just free lunch for Fudo because right. he's that much better than everyone else. It was the first time I had ever played Final Showdown. The fact that I got to the grand final is good, and I don't think I deserve to be mocked, but, yeah. you know, just because he rang me up, because he was going to win however he wanted to. That's cool. I mean, I'm really happy to lose to Fudo for that, because he's a master at VF, and I respect him as you know, for his skill on VF. And I haven't put any time into the game at all.
Yes, I mean, speaking of multi-game champions, how can somebody be like a Virtual Fighter champion, an EVO champion for Street Fighter? That seems...
Well, once you're a champion of EVF, you can be a champion in any game.
Right.
VF trains you for life. VF's the uncle that bullies you. Like, he'll train you for life. Like, I swear, like... Yeah, nah. You know,
VF trains you for life.
Yeah, VF is that game that sets you up for anything.
The motto on the cover, VF.
Because some people will try VF and it's too hard for them. But if you're one of those players that can play VF and be successfully good at VF, there's no fine game you can't play. That's just how good that game is. Like, it will set your mind up to understand how mind games are supposed to work. It's just, that's how it is, man. That's just, I don't know, there's no other way I can explain it. Mm. You know, you ask anyone that, not just anyone that understands the game. Because that's not what I'm talking about.
Mm.
You ask anyone that is actually good at master the game, as well. Right. Yeah, yeah. You have to be good. Yeah. It sounds really elitist, but yeah. I think to know what you're talking about in that sense, you have to have experienced it. A lot of people understand, but unless you've experienced it, there's only so far you can say. There's only so far you can go with how you express, because a lot of it is from the feeling. So right. if you haven't felt what it's like to be outguessed on a high level that you understand, or to outguess someone on that high level as well, and right. consistently play like that, yeah, it's not something you can just know about because someone told you, or you've seen it, or you understand the game. Like, right. you have to live it.
So I've heard that the new Virtual Fighter, they've simplified a lot of the system, so do you think it's lost a bit of,
you know, it might have. I don't know yet, because I haven't put time into it.
Right, it was basically your first time playing the game, right?
And I'm afraid that it might have. When I played it the other time, like, I was like, it's so simple now. It's so it feels so, like, it's so easier for him to get close and do big damage. Whereas before, a problem I have is someone somewhere decided that games needed to all have massive combos.
Yeah, who decided that?
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. You know, a game of chess is never about taking five pieces at once.
Yeah.
You take one piece at a time and you work your way through the opponent.
Yeah.
So I don't know why games needed to be anything different. It's almost like now we have to have this system that makes everything quick.
Mm.
Let's ring him out, you know? Let's put him against the wall and do a 100-hit combo. Like, mm. I don't understand why you'd want to end it quickly. If it's an enjoyable experience...
Yeah, you want to prolong it, right?
If it's an enjoyable experience, if it's fun...
Yeah.
People say games are fun, but if it was fun, why do you want it to end so quickly? You know? I don't get it.
So is that kind of why Marvel is one of the games that you don't play?
No, it definitely isn't. I'd love to get into Marvel and just rob everyone. I really would. But I just don't have the time, to be honest. Like, right. Marvel is sick, like, you know. But my friends tell me, like, you know, Marvel... is really easy to want to quit.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what they mean.
And Zach told me that, and
it's the most salt-inducing game of
that boy. Oh my days! So I remember this one time where I think I just lost. I don't play Marvel, but yeah. I just lost some tournament. Yeah. I think it was Street Fighter Cross Tekken, and I went to buy a hamburger or something, and my friend was like, "I went to buy a hamburger," and I went, "Man, this is well salty," and he went, "No, it's just because you lost."
Yeah.
The burger, know, because he tried some and he says, it's not soy at all, it's just because you're not. But if I played Marvel, I don't think I'd be able to eat anything after that. Damn. But no, I do want to get into Marvel because it is, you know, it's such a hype game, right?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
I want to be involved. Like, that's, I feel so, like, left out.
Yeah.
You know? I want to be part of that. That's just too hype, man. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever wanted to play a game just because it's hype, but that is one game that gets my vote, man. Game. Yeah, man. That was the game. That's the game of the tournament, every tournament now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Evo, Shadaloo, you know, like, everything I go to is Marvel is the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're having that SBO.
Yeah.
They're having Marvel SBO because of the hype. Because of the hype. They know that game is so hype that if they don't have that, they're going to be missing out.
Yeah, and is it going to be single game, like, SBO style? Because that will be the most random grab of all time.
That is going to be sort mayhem. But yeah, you know, I think that Marvel, sorry, no, sorry, Japan having these one game and off tournaments, that's just so brass. That's outdated, man.
Yeah.
Or as the Americans say, that's played out. Like, seriously, that, how can you still be doing that? I mean, what?
Yeah.
How, what part of one game isn't enough that you understand? You know, like, it's just, back in the day when they were the tournament to be at, but they're not anymore. I can perfectly, like, people can miss SBO now, and it's not the greatest thing. It's not the biggest deal anymore, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, sure, like, people might want to go to be there, but, you know, you don't necessarily want to enter, because it's one game, and, you know.
But AE, I heard that AE Top 8 now has a double.
Best of three.
Oh, best of three, yep. So
I didn't know, when they said it was two lives, I heard you have two lives. Yeah, I didn't know if they meant it's double a limb, or if it is best of three, like first of two as in two.
Oh, I'm not too sure, but at least, you know,
maybe so there's a bit more now.
Yeah, maybe it's a sign of the times. So yeah. Oh, wow,
they're so proud. They didn't want to give up the best of one game. Like, it took them this long.
Only like 15 years or something.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Nah, but that's cool. That's cool. I mean, SBO is a big deal. I know that, like, it's a big event for them, and, you know, they want to keep that classic, you know, that is what it is kind of thing. They wanted to stick with how it used to be. But, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you've also talked on your blog about Street Fighter Cross Tekken. You said that you like the game, but as a Tekken player, you kind of have problems with it.
Yeah, and basically, Street Fighter Cross Tekken, I really like the game.
Yeah.
But I'm a 2D player. I mean, like I mentioned, I'm a King of Fighters player. I'm a Street Fighter player. I've played all the old classics, Fatal Fury, Samurai Showdown, a lot of the games that you don't even hear about anymore. I've spent so much time playing Power Instinct on the Super Nintendo, you know, it's crazy.
Right.
Throwing teeth with the grandma and stuff. Like, I've spent so much time on all kinds of fighting games.
Yeah.
So I know how to play a 2D fighting game. But I also know how to play 3D fighting games as well. I've got experience in Soul Calibur or Soul Edge, you know, Tekken, VF, a couple of others that have come out along the years as well.
Right.
So basically, the reason I talked about that in my blog is because I had a lot of Tekken players who came to me personally to communicate how Tekken, Street Fighter Cross Tekken doesn't cater for them. And a lot of the things I talked about are things that they had said to me.
Mm.
And they didn't feel that the game supported them and really allowed them to express themselves in the way they wanted to be expressed in a fighting game.
Mm.
Now, Street Fighter Cross Tekken is, of course, the Street Fighter version of the Street Fighter Cross Tekken game, which is perfectly understood. That doesn't mean you're allowed to not include Tekken community.
Right.
Now, there are some players who are Tekken players who have come onto, you know, Street Fighter Cross Tekken and are happily involved.
Right.
But this isn't about them. It's irrelevant to them. It's irrelevant to the people that are happy, because this is about the people. This is the people that are not happy talking.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're happy, it's irrelevant. This is purely for the players who've come into Street Fighter Cross Tekken as pure Tekken players, not that good at Street Fighter, you know. Right. Maybe once upon a time they wanted to be good at Street Fighter 4, tried, didn't work out, went back to Tekken, you know. They thought, wow, this is going to be my chance to, like, get involved now. Mm. You know, finally, something I understand.
To breach the community, right?
And they've come in and seen that it's actually just Street Fighter with Tekken skins.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know? And now they're not happy, and those players don't have anywhere to go, don't have an outlet.
Mm.
And I became the outlet for them. Mm. I've taken all the crap for it, but these players deserve a voice as well.
That's true, yeah.
And that's why I just decided to do that for them. That's all that was about.
That's true. That's really interesting, because you're one of the rare players that play both games at a high level.
And that's why they came to me, because I would understand, because I play both. So, yeah.
So, I mean, personally, I mean, you talked about the juggle system a little bit in your blog, but do you want to elaborate about something?
Yeah, the juggle system didn't have to be lengthy. It didn't have to be 58 hit juggles or whatever. Right. It could just be something that might be similar to what happens in Tekken, or just relate closely enough so that the Tekken players feel comfortable with what they're doing. Because at the moment, everything is completely new, and it's like, okay, well, I'm just playing a Street Fighter character who looks like a Tekken character, and that's all. It's like, you know, I think me and saying that the juggle system could have been more Tekken-like is just me looking for an element where the Tekken players felt comfortable. Right. So if it wasn't the juggle system, it could have been maybe the throw system. If it wasn't the throw system, it could have been, you know, the high-low system. I don't know, something else. But the Tekken players, you know, the ones that aren't comfortable are really uncomfortable. You know, if you decide you're going to make a Street Fighter Cross Tekken game, you're obviously trying to bridge the gap somewhere, right? You're trying to maximize on your target demographic by including the Tekken community as well.
Exactly.
So if that doesn't work, then
what is the purpose of
If you've missed that, then Project mission failed, right?
Yeah,
mission failed. That's why I'm saying this for those players who didn't get what they wanted to get from Street Fighter Tekken and are now not in the community because of that, even though they're strong or pro or beginner or just but just, you know, fans of the Tekken franchise and people who are good at Tekken, you know.
I'll start wrapping up things, but yeah, did you want to quickly talk about the London scene, how things are set up over there? Are you guys based around arcades or local meetups or net cafes? Who are the community leaders and so on and so forth?
The London scene is based on, it used to be based on arcades, right. heavily based on arcades. We didn't have anywhere where we went to play consoles at all. And then as arcades died out, as with everywhere, we kind of fell onto console and, you know, it was mainly people at home or get-togethers at someone's house. Online appeared, you know, and then things went online. I mean, we still have a couple of arcades, but the arcades aren't maintained. I think you have the same problem in America,
yeah,
in Australia.
You played at Blue House, that was horrible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the arcades aren't maintained, the buttons don't work, no one fixes it. They come over, hey, the button doesn't work. They come over, press it, it works. No, it works.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's intermittent. No, it works, keep playing, here's your credit back. You know, yeah. And so they don't understand. You've got technicians that don't know about games and stuff.
Yeah.
So we have the same problem. So most people just stay at home now. Mm. We have a big problem in development because we don't have anywhere to play regularly. We don't really have a place that we can go to level up, you know.
Right.
We have weekly tournaments. Right. We do, which is really good. Right. That's probably the meat of our London team right now. And we have one location called Gamerbase.
Gamerbase, yeah.
And that's in Piccadilly Circus. It's inside of a building called Trocadero. And if you go in Gamerbase, you can, on a Monday, we have Street Fighter Cross Tekken tournament. Right. On Tuesday, we have Super Street Fighter 4. On Wednesday, I think it's kind of open playing field. I've been there before and seen like Blaze Blue. Sometimes I've seen KOF. Sometimes I've seen other games. So Thursday is Marvel Day. And on Friday is Soul Calibur. So almost every day of the week, you can go there and be in a tournament, you know, if you play the game.
That sounds awesome.
Really good. Yeah, it is really, really good. I mean, Gamerbase has, you know, really supported us and helped us through... Well, I mean, we would have nothing, you know, offline-wise, we wouldn't have anything solid if it wasn't for them. So, you know, regular, you know, and it's not just Gamerbase, it's, you know, Richard and Mark Denton, they're the Dragon Twins, Shin and Show Dragon. We have a really good community put together by Bulletproof, Simeon, called New Empire. We have a website, newempire.com. And we have Heart of Gaming, which a guy called Mark Starkey's made, so he's kind of got a venue and made that into an arcade. He's got cabinets and we can put consoles there, so we can go there and play now. So, you know, there, we have a guy called Ahmed. The Xbox Live account was KB1121, so people know him by that.
Yep.
But he supported the community for a long time as well. I mean, he supported the community members that, you know, some of the community members. But, you know, I mean, these are all people that have come together and allowed us to have places to play. Players have been able to benefit from and level up. So, you know, that... is a big benefit for us. And it's not easy because some people just don't have the setup, you know. They live with their parents or they live with family, and it's not convenient for to have people over for gaming, you know. So it's just how it is. So we need these things. I mean, we need more, really. The current issue we have now is that we have tournaments, but we don't have any
grinding sessions or training sessions.
Have any, you know, leveling up focused sessions where people can just go to learn new things. Because in that tournament, in that best of three, you're not really trying to learn.
If you play
two games, using what you know to win. So, and that's the difference. We actually need, because when it goes international, we need that level. You know? And we have the talent. We definitely have the talent. People have the time. But we just don't have the place to go there for that purpose.
Right, I see.
That's the main issue right now.
So how many regulars do you get to, let's say, the Street Fighter event every week? How many players do you guys get?
Well, it goes from something like, on a good day we can have 40.
Yeah.
And on a bad day we can have like 15 maybe, or 16.
Well, that's pretty good for a weekly. Like, we run weeklies now in Melbourne, and we have a bit of a problem where... the attendance, like, waivers back and forth, I guess, like, just strain. But yeah, that's really interesting.
So yeah, that's pretty much how our scene is at the moment.
That's cool.
So we've got, like, yeah, Winner Stays On, Logan, who's doing the Marvel and the Street Fighter. Logan Summer, a grime DJ, one of the really famous grime DJ.
Cool.
And, yeah, in his spare time, he runs our Street Fighter and Marvel tournament. So, that's, we've got all these guys, you know, Dog Tanyan, who's the Capcom community manager, putting on the Hebrew Street Fighter Cross Tekken event on Mondays with the EX Dragon Project guys, which is like Jamar, you know, Shin and Joe Dragon and those guys. So, yeah, no, it's...
And do you guys benefit from, like, being in Europe? So do you guys, like, travel around to, like, France, you know, just across...
Not really. There isn't enough... I've always said for a long time that there isn't enough unity in Europe. Right. You know, we're very separated because we are different countries.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that would be your big advantage of being like really close together.
Yeah, but we're not close enough. We're close, but it's still a flight.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, like I mean, Sydney's close to Melbourne, but it's still a plane.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's close, but not close enough. I mean, we all speak different languages,
right,
which is one division.
Yeah.
We all have different lifestyles. Sorry.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't all know each other that well. I mean, I know a lot of the French community quite well now because I've been there so many times and we've got each other on Xbox Live or on Facebook. And, you know, so I'm close to quite a few of those guys and that's really good.
Mm.
But not everyone is in my position.
Mm.
You know, not everyone is able to travel as much as I travel and stuff like that. So it's quite difficult for a lot of the players and we don't always come together just because of that issue.
Mm.
So the only time we really get to meet is probably for one big tournament, maybe like twice or three times a year, and that's a shame because we're never getting to have sessions with each other. I mean, if all of Europe got together,
combined, there's so much
to have knowledge. To have serious sessions, we'd be insanely good.
Yeah,
we would be insanely good. I think, you know, not to sound big-headed or anything, I think we'd definitely like be on par or like, I mean, sorry, I think we'd definitely be better than the US. You know, like, I mean, yeah, because. You know, I mean, I don't know though, because for Street Fighter, maybe the US have a similar problem.
Yeah, geographically.
A lot of top players that are spread out as well, so I guess it'd probably be the same, you know. But yeah, I mean, I've always said for a while that not just Europe, but if all of Europe and all of the US were all together, we could like take on like Japan or Korea. Like, I've always hoped that. But
didn't Keats come out with this idea that, you know, Shogun City or something where like all the fighting game players in the world settle in one city and just grind and, you know, we all work and live in the same city? The fighting game utopia.
If there was ever a time for the words wishful thinking. Right now, boy.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know what? That would be sick. Like, I would do anything for that to happen, man. That would be just too much. Especially, like, with my travelling now and stuff. Like, you know, to have a place to settle like that. But I wouldn't even need to travel.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Just
go next door. Yeah. See Filipino champ. You know, so you're up for that first of 10,
yeah?
No, man, I'm cooking. Alright, my bad. Go to the other side, be like Justin Wong there or something. That'd be too much, man.
That'll be... Maybe one day, you know, 5 years' time.
One day, yeah. Or even just like a few houses dotted around where a few gamers live.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you have a few houses that are like fighting game houses in San Fran where a few top players for that area all live together.
So not Shoryuken City, but Shoryuken Avenue or Shoryuken Boulevard or something.
Man, that would be... Wow, that is what I call a dream. That is what I call a dream.
Just need, you know, some billionaire to buy, to do that.
I know, right?
Set it up. Yeah. So let's start. Last question.
You make it sound so easy. Just one billionaire. just the one.
Just one billionaire. Yeah.
All right, go.
So who has the best afro in the fighting game community?
Oh man, isn't it that dude? That dude Cole. I swear it's like Cole.
Jason Cole.
I think he has a better afro than me. Like, he doesn't have a better all year round afro than me because mine changes style all the time. Right. Like, sometimes it's like kind of like little dreads, sometimes it's smooth around like now, sometimes it's short, sometimes it's a bit longer, like his one is just consistent. He's that consistent Ryu. I'm jumping characters all the time, like Cole gets the win, man, just for consistency.
Right, he's got a Japanese mindset to characters in his
He's got that focus. I respect that.
Nice.
I'll take second place, handy.
Second place. It's pretty good, second place. What about Combo Fiend's afro when he was young?
Yeah, but that doesn't count.
He doesn't maintain it. That's pretty cool.
Actually, his afro is pretty smooth as well.
Yeah,
I was really impressed on Cross Assault. He maintains that. Yeah, I like that. He's got that level. We have to play for a second.
Yeah.
No, but I've got more variation.
Right.
I win based on variation.
Nice. Okay, so shout-outs. Any last final thoughts?
Shout-outs to Western Wolves, man. If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be out here right now having this great interview, you know what I mean? Eating all this nice food and playing these games.
Yeah.
So shout-outs to Western Wolves, Burger, Philip.
Mm.
Shout-outs to Lone and Lions. I know we're, you know, kind of like separated now. We're playing with the sister company, but you guys are still great.
Mm.
And looking forward to being back in Europe. Shout-outs to Wednesdays On. Looking forward to playing in that again. Dogtanian, Twins, Jamal, you guys are cool. And shout out to Western Wolves, my teammates F Word and Andreas. His name, what name do you like better, Hands or Premium Hands?
Premium Hands.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I said Premium Hands at Shadow, and they were like, "Right, that name's sick, Premium Hands." And everyone was laughing in the car. So there you go, Andreas. There's your answer, boy.
Hands down.
Caprium hands down, that's what he said. You sick, man. Put it there.
Any more shout outs or that's it?
No, that's cool for now. I can't think of any others. I'll probably get slapped later. Oh, actually, you know what? Shout outs to the Allies as well.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't for them, like, I mean, they've just been so cool. Like, the whole Shadaloo showdown and putting me up and everything.
Mm.
Shout outs to the Tekken crew in Sydney. Like, thanks to you guys. You know, I had a great time thanks to you. Mm. Tekken crew and Street Fighter crew, actually. Mm. I had a good time at York Street Battle as well. Thanks for putting that on.
Mm.
And, yeah, just shout outs to all you players I've met in Australia. Like, I don't remember all the names, please forgive me. But, like, I've had such a great time here thanks to you, and I'm definitely going to be back.
Next year? You can come back next year for sure?
Sooner.
In fact, Christmas?
What time's my flight? Let me just miss it real quick. Thanks again, guys. I've had a great time. And thanks to you.
All right. No worries. Thanks very much, Ryan. Cheers.
Pleasure.
Thanks very much.
This is Boss Logic from Shadaloo.com. You're listening to Don't Be a Scrub podcast. Stay hungry. Stay salty. Don't be whipped like mutters.
Once again, I'd like to thank Ryan Hart for sitting down and doing the interview with Martin. We really appreciate it. And as always, you can subscribe to our podcast series and Martin's blog at Martin's blog, which is beingascrub.com. Just click on the RSS feed button and that'll take care of the rest. And as always, stay hungry, stay salty, and thank you for listening.